Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rights Radio Power Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr. The Rights Radio Power Hour is brought by RightsRadio.com and StarPublications.com, where consumer, homeowner, and health rights have a permanent address. We're also pleased to announce RightsUniversity.com, the first self-empowerment university on iPhone apps. Our topic today is Miranda Rights for Terrorists. My guest is global terrorism expert Dr. Neil Livingstone. Described by former NBC anchor Tom Brokaw as one of this nation's preeminent authorities on terrorism, Dr. Livingstone is a familiar face on the nation's newscast as a commentator of terrorism, intelligence, and national security issues. He's a veteran of more than 1,300 television appearances, including Nightline, Meet the Press, Today, The Early Show, Crossfire, Newsmaker Sunday, The Charlie Rose Show, Hardball, Dateline, The News Hour with Jim Lehrer, The O'Reilly Report, and the evening newscasts on all the major networks. He served as an on-air commentator for NBC News during the Atlanta Olympics and in the aftermath of the Oklahoma City and 9/11 terrorist attacks. Dr. Livingstone predicted the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center on CNBC 6 months before they occurred, said the terrorists would drop both towers and that Osama bin Laden would be behind the attacks. He's the author of 9 books on terrorism, security, and foreign policy. And welcome, Neil. I'm so pleased that you could join us on the Rights Radio Power Hour.
Nice to be with you, Joyce.
It's a very important discussion. We're speaking of power, and apropos, wouldn't Miranda Rights for Terrorists be a blow to our ability to fight global terrorism?
Well, it would certainly be a setback, and it would be reversing all the progress we've made in the last 20 years. Back during the 70s and the 80s, we regarded terrorism largely as a law enforcement problem. And therefore, even if we were engaged with terrorists abroad, we brought them home to stand trial, and we saw it again as a law enforcement problem. In that circumstance, reading them their Miranda rights would be appropriate. But for those of us who felt that that was not the proper way to fight terrorism abroad, that it was a war, that we should engage with terrorists and deal with them as military adversaries. This is crazy. I mean, according to reports we now have, that terrorists that we've captured in Afghanistan, that we are Mirandizing. In other words, we're reading them their rights, even though they were captured in combat in Afghanistan. This is crazy. And it will make it very, very difficult to address the problem of terrorism and keep this nation safe.
When was the order actually delivered, and who delivered it? Because it crept up on everybody. We weren't aware of it. There was no big announcement about it.
Well, we don't really know, and the administration has been rather coy about this. We don't know whether this is administration policy or whether we just have some administration people that have directed U.S. Soldiers in Afghanistan to Mirandize these people without this having gone through the full chain of command. We don't know right now, but what we want to do is preempt this and tell the administration, let's not go there. This is the way that we were trying to fight terrorism a quarter century ago, and it didn't work. And it was what Bill Clinton was still trying to do in the 1990s and probably set the groundwork for 9/11. I mean, we were trying to arrest Osama bin Laden, not kill him. And even after the bombings of our embassies in East Africa and the bombing of the USS Cole, one of our naval ships that was attacked by suicide bombers. You cannot fight suicide bombers and terrorists internationally as a law enforcement problem. Here in the United States, yes, the Constitution prevails. Domestic terrorists like the man that killed the guard at the Holocaust Museum the other day, that's a terrorist, but he's a domestic terrorist. He will be not dealt with as a military adversary, but by the full force of the law, because that occurred in the United States. But to think that we're going to engage people in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan and then try to put them on trial someplace is madness.
Are we doing it in Iraq, or is it only Afghanistan so far? Is there a blanket policy, even though there's no policy? What are you hearing from your military colleagues?
The only reports of Mirandizing that we have right now that are credible appear to come from Afghanistan. We do not know whether that's being done in Iraq at the present time, but we have credible reports of Mirandizing combatants that have been captured by the United States in Afghanistan. And we're really trying to get clarification from the administration. Is this something that was a few zealots did, had gone through the chain of command? Had the president approved it? Is this policy? Those are unanswered questions today.
Why doesn't the administration respond publicly? It's a pretty easy question. Yes or no? Did you give the order or not?
Well, they may be having second thoughts about it, even if they gave the order. And so at the present time, the administration has not tried to clarify this, and we're still waiting for an answer. And at some point, we hope that someone in the administration, either the National Security Advisor or the president himself, or perhaps Secretary Gates or Eric Holder at the Justice Department, that someone at some point tell us whether this is administration policy or this was an aberration, something that shouldn't have happened and won't happen again.
Going back a bit, when I announced you on air, I mentioned that you predicted the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center. What did you know then that everybody else didn't know? How is it that you were able to make such a prediction?
Well, it was very interesting. In the summer of 2001, NBC, and I'd worked at NBC for almost a decade as an on-air commentator on terrorism and national security problems, they invited three so-called terrorism experts, of which I was one, and two novelists. One was Jim Grady, the author of what was originally 6 Days of the Condor. The movie was 3 Days of the Condor. And John Wiseman, who has a long and distinguished career as a writer. They put us in a room in New York City, and they said, all right, is the United States going to be hit again by terror, or hit by terrorists? And we said, yes, it's coming. And they said, well, what's the likely target, or what city? And we said, absolutely, New York City. That's the most likely target. Washington would be second. They said, well, what's the target in New York City? Well, we said the World Trade Center towers. And we said they'll drop both towers. And they said, who's going to do this? We said Osama bin Laden. They even had done computer graphics of the two towers going down. This show was scheduled to air, as far as I know, on September 19th, 2001. The show was pulled from the air because of the fact that, obviously, the wounds were so raw at that point from the 9/11 attack, which occurred only a week earlier. But in the summer of 2002, NBC revisited this, and they brought us all back together again. They showed clips from the first show, and they said, how come you guys got it right and no one else did? And we had a variety of responses, and we said, well, first of all, we were listening to what the terrorists were saying. Osama bin Laden declared war on the United States on several occasions in public statements and said he was coming to kill us. We knew that they had tried to bomb the World Trade Center towers in 1993 and failed. And we knew that really bothered them, and that we had, and this was unclassified, this was information that we got from our own sources that indicated that the terrorists were going to try to come back and do it again. And even Mr. Rassam, who was arrested for the 1993 bombings, when he flew back, from Pakistan, and they passed the World Trade Center. He looked out with his FBI captors, and he said, you know, if I just had a little more time, a little more money, I would have dropped both towers. And we knew that the towers had special significance. They, throughout the world, when the evening stock market results came on the air, they didn't put up a picture of the New York Stock Exchange. They didn't put up a picture of the Statue of Liberty. They always used the Twin Towers to connote the New York, the United States, and financial news. And so they were iconic images. And what happened, we believe, was that the Al-Qaeda, and this is in their writings, their public statements, they believe that New York was a twofer, if you will. It was the heart of American economic power, which was, by extension, the basis of our political and military power. And two, it was the largest Jewish city in the world, and these people are anti-Semites. They wanted to kill as many Jews as they could. They wanted to kill as many Americans as they could. If they were Jewish Americans, that was even better. And they felt that they could strike a blow that would undermine our political and military power. And as a consequence, they struck the World Trade Center towers. And in Washington, of course, they struck directly at the very seat of military power at the Pentagon, and we had every reason to believe that they were also going to strike the U.S. Capitol with the plane that went down in Pennsylvania. So we listened to the terrorists, we connected the dots, and that's probably where the government failed at the time, was that they had lots of information coming in from FBI, smart agents up in Minnesota and down in Arizona that said, we got a bunch of Arabs taking flight lessons in the United States. This is kind of suspicious, and we had that knowing that they had just tried and failed at a plot to bomb 12 airliners in the Pacific, American airliners, probably killing as many people as they would have killed as they did kill on 9/11. And we knew that they had declared war on us. We knew that they said they were coming. We knew that they had already tried to hit the World Trade Center towers. Look, you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to put this all together. And the five of us were unified on that view.
You were unified, and you had that knowledge. It was public information, and we were not prepared. We were not ready. So where are we now? What kind of information, public information, are we ignoring?
Well, we're better off than we were prior to 9/11, that we can say. Homeland security is a major priority in the United States today. We've hardened some of our targets of opportunity. We are trying to have better sharing of intelligence information, but we haven't succeeded completely in doing that. Various agencies still have their own prerogatives, still try to put their arms around intelligence information and keep it to themselves. We have, but I think our real problem is a lack of resolve within the political leadership of the country and, quite frankly, in the American public. A few years ago, I was out in California delivering a speech, and most of the people in the audience felt that the war on terrorism was already over, and we had won, and why don't we loosen up things at the airport? It was because, obviously, Osama bin Laden and the Taliban had been driven from power in Afghanistan. He was hunkered down someplace up in the mountains. There had not been another terrorist attack in the United States because we had been successful with the previous administration in shutting that down. And people were of the mind, okay, the war's over and won. They have a very short memory. Let's move on now. And we don't like to be inconvenienced at the airport. We don't like to show our ID to get in buildings and what have you. And I think that there are many members of Congress, too, that believe the same. We've got people now that are crying crocodile tears over the way we treat terrorists. And I don't think that we ought to have abject violation of someone's human rights, but I'm a little mystified by the number of people that think it was terrible that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the architect of 9/11, the guy that killed 3,000 of our fellow citizens, that he was waterboarded. My view is, so what? We got critical information from him. He was one of only three people that probably was subjected to intense waterboarding.
And they provided 60% of the information, which has protected us from further 9/11s.
Exactly so. And we need to continue our vigilance in terms of terrorism today. These guys, they may be hunkered down in the mountains up in Waziristan and so on. They may be, Islamic student centers in Europe. Who knows where they are today? But they are spending all of their time, 24/7, trying to devise ways to come back and do this again and even better the next time. They want to kill us. They want to kill our fellow citizens. They want to destroy the moderate Arab regimes in the Middle East. They want to undermine our European allies. This is a war, and its stakes are of the highest value since World War II. I mean, we've been attacked, and somehow we want to ignore that fact today. We have certain people in this country that want to ignore that.
It appears that the White House wants to ignore it by declaring that we could no longer call it a war on terrorism. How can you explain that?
Well, I think these semantic things, in order to appease the far left wing of the Democratic Party today, which is in complete denial, and they don't want to call this a war on terror anymore. They don't like that sound. Don't want to have strong measures for dealing with terrorism today. They want to basically ignore the problem. And we know that there is some division within the administration itself. They have a terrific national security advisor, General Jim Jones. Secretary Gates is still in his position. But we know that there are others in the administration that believe that this is a problem that, quote-unquote, we've overreacted to, that we, by our pursuit of terrorists around the globe, that we've somehow alienated our allies in the world. And I think that what we're going to see is more terrorist acts in the future. I can't tell you when, but we do know that this is the terrorists see this not as a war of next week or next month or even next year. They see this as a war that may take generations, maybe hundreds of years, and they intend to be around for a long twilight struggle, and where they undermine the United States, Israel, Western Europe, those countries that share Christian Judaic values, and they see us as the enemy. And they also see those secular Muslims or, shall we say, moderate Muslims, those countries as arch enemies as well. They're trying to undermine Egypt and Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Arab states and so on. And so this is a global war, and with global targets. And we know that Al Qaeda has cells in probably at least 36 countries.
Now, the meeting between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu was chilly at best. And at the same time, we're closing Gitmo. So we're letting some terrorists go, obviously, and we're coming down friends and allies. What's happening?
Well, I think it was unfortunate that the meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu was not more productive. I've known him since 1979. I know him as a strong and forthright individual. And he's been a tough guy. He has a special operations background himself. His brother, Jonathan, was killed as the commander of the Entebbe raid. He has no illusions about terrorism, but he's rather like Nixon in some respects, or like Menachem Begin. He has the credentials, and most Israelis trust him not to be weak on the issue of Israeli security or terrorism. They know that that if he ultimately makes a deal with the Palestinians, it's probably going to be one that's going to last and that's going to have teeth in it. And so I think rather than trying to find peace in the Middle East with the weak Israeli government, such as the one that just collapsed and led to the most recent election, that a strong leader like Netanyahu is the kind of person that Obama should be happy that he can do business with.
And what about Gitmo, the closing of Gitmo? How do you feel about that?
Well, the administration is backing off on closing Gitmo and backing off on, releasing CIA interrogation photos. I think, they were very naive, but they appear to have learned something in the first 5 months of the administration. And that is, number one, if you're going to close down Gitmo, where are you going to take these people? There was a huge uproar in Congress, with even Senator Reid initially saying, not in my background, in my backyard, I don't want them in Nevada. My constituents don't want terrorists here. We don't want them in our federal prisons. Gitmo, quite frankly, is a very good solution to this problem. And what we've done now is we're trying to release some of these people, send them back, and we may have to fight them a second time. And then we have absurd situations like the Uyghurs. The Uyghurs are a ethnic Chinese terrorist group. The Chinese don't like them. They've also made some trouble in other parts of Central Asia. And we have a small number of Uyghurs, and we have sent, I believe, four of them to Bermuda. And there are reports that we've paid Palau, an island in the Pacific, $200 million to resettle something between 8 and 12 of these people, which, I come from a Western state. That's a big part of our annual budget there. We've got Americans unemployed today. We've got a financial crisis. I cannot see any way to justify spending tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to settle people that were probably enemies of the United States and enemies of our allies. Like the, we may have disagreements with the Chinese government, but we need their help on North Korea and so on. And they're livid that we, are going to settle these people someplace where they can have soft lives and continue their agitation against the government of China.
I think what I don't understand, and perhaps many people don't understand, is we say we're not closing Gitmo, but one by one, perhaps the majority of these terrorists are being sent elsewhere, and the ones you just mentioned, they're not being sent to another prison. They're going to be opening businesses. They're being shown lounging by the pool with their nice clothes. So they were effectively sent to a lovely life, and we paid for it. I don't. What did we pay $200 million for? The right to give them life?
Well, it's essentially to bribe the government of Palau to take these people. And I would hope they would open businesses. I would hope they sat by the pool. My fear is that some of these people are going to recycle as terrorists again, and so that we're going to find ourselves fighting the same people over and over again, rather like the recidivism we see in criminality in the United States, where we arrest the same criminal over and over again. I don't think we want to fight some of these terrorists a second or a third time. And we know that even with some of the terrorists that were released under the Bush administration, for various reasons, either because our European allies wanted them and they were nationals of those countries, there were a variety of reasons, that some of those people have come back. We've captured them in Yemen. We've found them on the battlefield in Pakistan and Afghanistan again. We saw them cropping up in Iraq. I don't know why the solution to this problem isn't to keep these people in permanent incarceration. If we have fully established that indeed they were enemy combatants or terrorists, there may be some people there that don't belong in Gitmo, and we should be very careful that we haven't made mistakes, and we should review those cases on an ongoing basis to make certain our information was accurate. But if you were an illegal combatant against the United States, we ought to continue to lock you up and, frankly, just throw away the key.
How many people will be left in Gitmo in the end?
Well, that's hard to say. We have a couple hundred people there right now, and we just don't know what the administration is going to do. Are they going to put them on civil trial in the United States? They have shipped one guy back to New York, and he's going on trial in New York. Are they going to have military tribunals? That's where they seem to be heading, but that's where the Bush administration was earlier. And it's probably the most efficient way of dealing with these people. The trouble is, if you send them back to the United States and put them on and charge them in civil court procedures, so you suddenly get ambulance-chasing lawyers eager for the publicity that who will represent anyone and will represent these guys. They'll try to greenmail and blackmail the government by threatening to release intelligence information. And the administration, frankly, has made a proposal now that would make it even easier for defense lawyers to get classified information, that they would get it even prior to the court ruling on that matter. And that is absolute madness as well.
Though the public obviously is not fully aware of all this going on, but it's really quite dangerous overall.
Well, I think the public needs to become aware. It's just like after 9/11, everyone ran for cover and said, you know, it was done on someone else's watch, or I wasn't responsible, or, you know, I tried to do my best, but there were all of these forces limiting our ability to collect intelligence and so on. As Jack Kennedy said many years ago, he said, victory has 1,000 fathers, and failure is an orphan. And, you know, we need to assess responsibility in the United States, need to do it now with respect to the this administration and the previous administration, and say, look, if there's another attack here, someone ought to pay for that. If they haven't done the right thing, if members of Congress have not supported our efforts on strong tactics on terrorism and so on, we ought to have some recourse in that regard. We ought to, and maybe more than just voting people out of office. We're talking about the life of our country. We're talking about the lives of our citizens. And we're talking about the security of our allies.
And we're talking about people who sit on the intelligence subcommittees of the House and the Senate, who are privy to information that you're privy to because of your extensive contacts worldwide and all of the traveling that you do. So they do know what you're saying. They're not ignorant of that fact.
Well, and today we have people in Congress that, once again, are apologists for terrorism. They blame what they saw as the aggressive practices of the Bush administration for having alienated people and leading to terrorist recruitment around the world. We've heard that from President Obama's top circle of advisors. You know, they are crying, as I said earlier, crocodile tears over the way terrorists are treated, and isn't this terrible? That even the mastermind of the 9/11 attack has his advocates in the United States that say he should be treated differently, treated better, he needs better legal representation, why isn't it too bad that he was waterboarded? Well, I think that we need to get real about the world we live in, the threats we face, and address those head on.
Neil, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Rights Radio Power Hour. I hope you'll be back with us again in the future, and I want to wish you well. So thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. All the best to you, and you keep up the good work.
Thank you. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr with the RightsRadio.com Power Hour. Bye-bye.